Hello and welcome to Pandora's Box. This is Kalia. The topic of our conversation today is healing narcissistic abuse. Since I've had so many requests for print books, I've just released my latest book, Healing Narcissistic Abuse and Finding the True Self, in print. If you've gained wisdom and insight from my podcast and website, I encourage you to purchase this book so you will have a great resource at your fingertips and support the continuation of my work in the field of narcissistic abuse. This print book is currently only available in the U.S. as the shipping cost and trip to the post office to fill out custom forms make it really difficult for small publishers. However, the ebook is still available for those of you outside the U.S. who would like to read this book. Go to narcissismfree.com and click on books to learn more about how you can get your copy. The ebook has been out for several years. It's just gone into print. If you do read the print book or the ebook, regardless of where you purchase it, and this book is helpful to you, please consider posting a review on my book page on Amazon. Just go to Amazon, click on books, and type in the title, Healing Narcissistic Abuse and Finding the True Self. You do not have to purchase this book through Amazon to post a review. I did broadcast an episode on healing narcissistic abuse several years ago when I first released the ebook, but it felt time to delve into this topic again. I would first like to begin by talking about narcissistic personality disorder and other disorders of narcissism. Narcissistic personality disorder is a psychological term used to diagnose people who have a certain set of characteristics that fall under a category called Cluster B personality disorders. A personality disorder is really a character disorder. It is not something that can be treated with medication, although with some personality disorders, medications can help with the anxiety, depression, and other symptoms. There are also many dual diagnoses, such as bipolar and narcissism, or bipolar and borderline, and bipolar disorder can be treated with medications. The quick definition of narcissistic personality disorder, also known as NPD, is a pervasive pattern of grandiosity, need for admiration, and a lack of empathy. But the disorder goes much deeper than this. What does it mean to be grandiose? Well, we can all have grandiose ideas sometimes, but the narcissist has a grandiose personality, which means he or she has an inflated sense of self and a sense of entitlement, which results in a superiority complex. One can only see himself as superior by seeing others as inferior, and the narcissist's sense of self requires him to deflate others in order to sustain his or her inflated ego. Narcissists also believe they are entitled to success, money, and positive attention that has not been earned. Now, if the narcissist just went around deflating everyone by calling them names, telling them they are stupid, ugly, incapable, etc., he wouldn't be very well liked. So he masks his superiority beneath an often quite likable facade. That facade allows the narcissist to actually inflate those he or she seeks to be in their favor. The narcissist can be charming, charismatic, complimentary, hyper-focused on a love or business interest, showering that interest with attention, admiration, affection, and adoration, the very qualities a narcissist seeks. In giving that attention, the narcissist is successful at receiving the admiration, attention, and adoration he or she requires to sustain his or her inflated self-opinion. Okay, so in reality, we all seek attention and admiration. So in itself, seeking these things doesn't make us a narcissist. We all want to be liked. We all tend to care about what others think of us. But with a narcissist, this is greatly exaggerated. The need for attention, admiration, adoration, and positive ego reinforcement is pathological. NPD, narcissistic personality disorder, is a pathological disorder. Where the average person on a scale of 1 to 10 may rank somewhere between 1 and 4 in his or her needs for attention and admiration, the narcissist is upward of 7 to 10 on that scale. Where it really becomes pathological is what drives this insatiable need. The narcissist's lack of empathy means that he or she really doesn't have the emotional ability to care about the people that he or she seeks to be fed by. His drive is to get his needs met for admiration, attention, adoration, money, fame, sex, or whatever drives him. But his ability to care about the providers of these things is missing. And this is where the disorder becomes destructive. It is most destructive to the people the narcissist is using to get his or her needs met, because we are led to believe that the person really cares and has our best interest at heart. And there is a real deception going on. At the core of narcissism is the emotional maturity of a six-year-old. Where the narcissist is emotionally very underdeveloped, he or she is often intellectually developed. The narcissist may focus on intellectual or physical achievement. He may be successful in business or be super athletic. He may be an underachiever as well, compensating for his lack of business or material success by overdeveloping his body and physical appearance. Many narcissists are very sexually seductive and can survive on the good graces and finances of the people he or she seduces. When you couple the narcissist's financial success with his or her physical good looks, you have a very dangerous combination. We are taught in our society to value looks and money over most other qualities. We see someone with money and good looks as successful. So if the narcissist can pull off these two qualities coupled with false confidence and charisma, his pursuits will be quite successful. Since we place so much importance on appearances, we can be easily seduced by the charms of the narcissist. If our own need for attention is strong, due to perhaps a lack of attention in childhood, we're even more ripe for the seduction of a narcissist. However, anyone, regardless of age, sex, education, background, and achievement, can fall prey to the seductions of a narcissist. I hear a lot of women say, but I'm really successful in life. I'm a strong and successful woman. How did I fall for this? Well, that's very, very typical. There's always some reason. And so don't beat yourself up if you fell for it. Just get to the business of healing. Once caught up in this web of illusion, believing that we are seeing and experiencing is real, we're quite shocked when the narcissist's pathology begins to surface. We won't call this the true self of the narcissist because in reality, the narcissist is completely cut off from his true self. It was buried in early childhood. The narcissist operates out of his false self or illusionary self. Although the narcissist may appear super confident and successful, he or she is actually very insecure at the core. There is a deflated self that has learned to overcompensate by falsely inflating his sense of self. So it can be very confusing and even deceiving. When you meet the narcissist, you may believe you've met someone strong, confident, and secure in himself, but the reality is quite the opposite. This shows itself with the narcissist being fiercely competitive, jealous, controlling, deceitful, dishonest, angry, hateful, and cruel. Once again, we're shocked to see these qualities emerge from a personality we believed was quite the opposite. And these qualities often don't show themselves until we are well hooked into the relationship, whether it be a business or a personal relationship. Of course, this happens in family too, so you're hooked you're hooked in at a very early age. The reason we don't see the behavior right away is that the narcissist has become a very good actor, able to play a role quite eloquently for a period of time. This role is the facade, and it is difficult for the narcissist to maintain this facade for any length of time in his close interpersonal relationships. He or she can maintain the facade indefinitely with casual relationships and acquaintances, but those who come too close to the narcissist will eventually begin to see his or her darker side, and that side can be quite dark. There are other cluster B personality disorders, such as borderline personality disorder and antisocial personality disorder, also called a sociopath. Both of these disorders include strong characteristics of narcissism. In psychology, one can be diagnosed with several disorders, but one is seen as predominant. A sociopath, for example, is characterized by a lack of empathy, compassion, guilt, and remorse. And guess what? These are the very qualities that make us human. So sociopaths are basically lacking humanity. They are the serial killers, the con artists, the rapists, the gigolo, and the criminal. The prisons are filled with sociopaths. They simply lack any ability to care about how their actions and behavior affects others. Their moral barometer, guilt and remorse, are missing, so they can commit any crime, and their only feeling is the fear of being caught. They can rape, murder, and steal without a conscience. They are the most dangerous people on the planet. These are the people we call evil. Narcissists can run a close second with the lack of compassion and empathy, but narcissists will often have the capacity for guilt and remorse. Still, a narcissist is quite capable of evil deeds against humanity. Borderline disordered individuals can be equally dangerous because borderlines are also narcissistic. They have a deep insecurity and fear of abandonment, as well as a fear of intimacy. They are known to have extreme instability in their relationships. They do a dance of push-pull, in-out, on-again, off-again, which is all to compensate for their needs for closeness, but their inability to trust it. A borderline's neediness and insecurity is so strong, she is also incapable of having any true empathy for those she is pulling into her chaotic dance. Borderlines are known for their "I hate you, don't leave me" dynamic, or their "come here, go away." The borderline's hatred of others is really a projection of her own self-loathing and deep insecurity. But understanding the dynamics of the borderline won't help you to heal it or fix it in another. The borderline has the best chance of actually healing and getting better of the cluster B personality disorders, because deep down she's really miserable and in deep pain. Some will describe the borderline as having super thin skin, like an emotional burn victim, and the slightest touch sets her off. She's in such pain she's often suicidal. It is her deep emotional pain and instability in her relationships that may lead her to seek professional help. And although therapists will say borderlines are their most challenging clients or patients due to extreme lack of trust, fear of abandonment by the therapist, lack of accountability, and a tendency to rage and undermine the therapist, if a borderline sticks with therapy long enough, she has the hope of improving and learning how to manage her emotions much more effectively. If you are involved with anyone who shows signs of any of these disorders, you can't be the one to help them, because any attempt on your part to get them the help they need will be met with extreme resistance. Narcissists don't believe they are the one with the problem, and so they project it onto you and convince themselves you are the one with the problem. And this is what we call crazy-making behavior. We see this type of personality accusing us of the very thing they themselves are doing. The borderline may have moments in which she admits she has a problem, but that door can slam shut as quickly as it opens. Many of my clients identify with the descriptions of narcissistic and borderline personalities because they feel hypersensitive, emotional, and raw and reactive, especially with a narcissist. Just like we can have narcissistic traits, we can also have borderline traits, which is a lack of balance in the life of a highly sensitive personality. The highly sensitive personality is not a disorder, but a personality characteristic or type. The highly sensitive personality has a lot of very beautiful and admirable qualities. She's what we often call the empath. She can be open, vulnerable, intuitive, artistic, creative, and free-spirited. Where the HSP, highly sensitive personality, cross the line to borderline personality is where there's an extreme lack of balance and inability to manage one's emotions. In my book, I talk about mild BPD, which can easily occur as a result of narcissistic abuse. Mild BPD can be a temporary coping mechanism. When a highly sensitive person couples with an emotionally repressed narcissist, she begins to empath his repressed emotions and is often confused about what belongs to the narcissist and what belongs to her. The empath, or person with mild BPD, can become very emotionally reactive with the narcissist, giving him more fuel to call her crazy, hysterical, hypersensitive, and all those things that the narcissist loves to project onto the other. The really crazy-making part is that the sensitive personality is reacting in ways she doesn't normally react. She's not herself. She's very off balance. She feels crazy and even can feel suicidal. It's actually the crazy-making behavior of the narcissist coupled with the sensitive nature of the HSP, or mild borderline personality, that is causing her to react the way she does. Think of putting an animal in a small cage and then poking it through that cage. It is provoked to ferociousness. So people with mild borderline personality won't notice their own internal pain, rage, and anger in normal circumstances, but when provoked by crazy-making behavior, they really react in crazy ways. Once the narcissist is removed from their life and they undergo a period of time in recovery, often a year or two, they settle back down and return to normal functioning, although there is often remaining post-traumatic stress symptoms that can be triggered. Some psychologists are actually looking at the relationship between post-traumatic stress disorder and borderline personality disorder. Borderline is commonly the result of early childhood trauma and/or abuse. And this is why dealing with the underlying trauma, abuse, rage, anger, and anxiety can result in healing for the borderline. The sociopaths of the world are pretty much the menace of society. They are not known to improve at all. The pathology simply runs too deep. These are the most dangerous. Narcissists can be helped, but they have to realize the problem is internal and commit themselves to a very long course of treatment, which rarely ever happens. This is unlikely for most narcissists because their grandiosity and refusal to take responsibility for their own actions and behavior is strong. The narcissist's grandiosity prevents him from seeing himself objectively. I want to mention another disorder, we'll call it. It's not a personality disorder, but it is a dysfunctional coping mechanism, and that is codependence. The codependent avoids her own pain and dysfunction by hyper-focusing on the issues of someone close to her. This behavior can look like helping or rescuing. A codependent can focus her energy on the alcoholism of the alcoholic, the drug addiction of the drug addict, or the narcissism of the narcissist. A codependent denies her own needs and caters to the needs of the other. She often appears loving, caring, and selfless, but what is really happening is avoidance. When people ask me what they can do to help the narcissist, they are operating from codependency. Helping the narcissist should never be the goal. The goal needs to be on helping oneself to deal with the narcissism and breaking away from the toxic relationship dynamic one finds herself in with the narcissist. When you try and help the narcissist, your energy is focused on trying to get that person to see the error of his ways and change. The codependent might try and get the narcissist into counseling, make sure he's keeping his counseling appointments, and digging to see if he's getting anything out of his counseling appointments or if it's helping. Micromanaging the narcissistic behavior and bringing it to his or her attention is a product of the codependent's rescuing qualities. The message is, I need you to change so that I can feel better, or so that I can have the relationship I want. So as you might have guessed, most of us involved with a narcissist for any length of time are codependent. We learn this in childhood, and we try and control the behavior of those around us by being good, by not causing waves, by caretaking, people-pleasing, denying our needs, and tending to the emotional needs of a parent. The biggest thing we do in trying to help the narcissist is to try to get the narcissist to be accountable and take responsibility for his behavior. And this can be a bottomless hole that can never really be filled, because the very nature of narcissism is a lack of ability to see oneself objectively. The narcissist doesn't see that he is the one with a problem. He denies the issues within himself, projects them onto you, and blames you for what's going on. So if you spend your energy trying to get the narcissist to see his own behavior, you're really wasting your energy. As a codependent, we hyper-focus on the narcissist because we are conditioned to focus on the other and deny our own needs. So as codependents, we need to bring our attention and energy back home and start focusing on self and our own needs. And this is why I call my healing business the Path Back to Self. It is the self that needs to become our primary focus. When we focus on ourselves, we can also get really honest about how we feel. I am sad. I'm angry. I'm lonely. I'm depressed. I feel used. I feel betrayed. I feel discarded. And really delve deeply into these feelings so that they can be healed. When you realize there's nothing you can do to help the narcissist, you are on your way to healing. I talk about cutting off contact with the narcissist because until you do, you will still be caught up in this dynamic in some way. The narcissist is a user. He or she will use others to get his or her needs met and won't care who he takes down in the process. So even though the narcissist may have dumped you for a fresh, shiny new source of supply, if that supply doesn't work out or the newness wears off, he may come back looking for a little more of what you have to offer. We often mistake the narcissist coming back as a sign that he or she really loves or cares about us, but this is far from true. He cares only about getting his own needs met, and if you happen to be affected by it, oh well, that's your problem, and you'll have to deal with it. Oftentimes, the narcissist will need several sources of supply going at once because he or she can be so easily burn out as sources. Supply for the narcissist are people who provide for the needs of the narcissist. A narcissist can be polyamorous, which is having more than one sexual partner going at once, or polygamous, which is having more than one husband, wife, or significant other at a time. But being narcissistic by nature, he does not disclose his others to his partners because he may risk losing them as a source. Keeping his sources are important to him, not because he loves them or cares about them, but because he needs people to take care of his needs, to reflect him admirably and positively. So cutting off contact is really the only way to heal and let go. When you make a personal commitment to cut off contact, you're making a deal with yourself that should the narcissist come back for any reason whatsoever, you will not respond or reply. You will delete the messages or not answer the phone. And this is self-preservation. If you have children with the narcissist and can't cut off all contact, you can cut off energy supplied to that person. It takes some work to learn to do this, and I can help you with this if you book a session. But energy is actually a lot of what a narcissist is looking for in a source of supply, to be fed emotional energy even. And that's why it's said that if you are emotionally reacting, getting angry, raging at the narcissist, you're also feeding them narcissistic supply. You're giving him emotional energy. Even if it's negative, it's still energy. So no energy is the second best thing and will prevent you from feeding the narcissist and keeping hooked in as a source of supply. When we go no energy, which is an option only if you can't, for reasons of family or work obligations, completely cut off contact with the narcissist. In small communities, some may choose this path as well. No energy means not looking that person in the eye, not talking to that person about anything personal whatsoever, not showing any emotion, not talking about anything emotional, keeping it strictly business, being short, firm, and to the point in your communication. Don't show that you are riled up, hurt, confused, or upset. Do not dwell or dawdle in conversation. Keep it brief, to the point, excuse yourself, and get away. Keep all email or text communication brief and to the point. Draw boundaries around the narcissist dumping or unloading on you or accusing you of anything whatsoever. Let him or her know that if there is any nastiness or accusations in his or her correspondence, you will not read it and it will be put in a file for further court action if necessary. If the narcissist needs a reply from you, such as what time you are dropping off your child, he will need to respect your boundaries. Otherwise, he will not get an answer. So the first part of healing once you break away is to cut off or limit contact and bring your focus back to yourself. Some people call me who are still in their relationships with the narcissist and wanting help healing and dealing. I usually tell them that it's very difficult to heal a burned hand when it's still on the stove. We are all looking for a quicker, easier way. We all want to avoid pain and confrontation. But if you're still living with an abuser, it can be very difficult to avoid the abuse. I do have tools I teach for those who are permanently or temporarily choosing to stay with the narcissist. So we work on learning ways to cope, draw boundaries, and taking care of the self while still there. But narcissists hate boundaries and do their very best to plow through them. It can be a challenge to continue living with one. Healing narcissistic abuse really is about finding the true self. When we get involved with a narcissist, we slowly begin to give pieces of ourselves away in an attempt to keep the narcissist happy and take care of his or her needs. We may not even realize we're doing this. We deny our own needs, but then again, we may have been conditioned to do this from early childhood. So part of our healing process is to turn our attention inward and start paying attention to our needs. What is it you really need right now? Sometimes it's as simple as needing to cry, to feel your pain, to express your anger, to be comforted, to be validated by someone who cares, to feel safe, to have your financial needs met, to speak out, to have boundaries, and to feel cared for. Coming out of a narcissistic relationship dynamic, discovering your own needs can be quite the process. I recommend getting a journal and writing about how you feel and what you do need. This is a process of self-discovery. You must also learn to protect yourself and care about yourself and your needs. Keep yourself out of harm's way. And although defending yourself is a huge temptation with a narcissist, you don't need to waste your time or energy defending yourself. A narcissist projects. He will blame you for what he is doing. Defending yourself against his accusations is a big waste of time. The accusations will keep coming. If you give your energy defending yourself, he is still getting your energy. It's best to tell yourself, I'm not going to give him the satisfaction of a response to that one. Ignore all accusations and validate yourself. Remind yourself that what the narcissist is saying about you is a projection and has nothing to do with you. Do not respond, reply, or comment to any accusations. Now, you may be triggered and have a lot of emotions coming to the surface when you're accused or blamed for something. You never want to ignore what is rising up in you. You just don't want to involve the narcissist in it. When you're in a safe place, bring your attention to what you are feeling and what is going on inside of you. You might say to yourself, I'm feeling really triggered. I'm panicky, anxious, uneasy, fearful, angry, and feeling really needy right now. And it's okay that you feel that way. It may not feel okay, but I want you to validate your feelings, letting yourself know that all your feelings are welcome and valid. You just don't want to share them with a narcissist or with anyone who can't truly be there for you or anyone who makes your feelings wrong. You will need to find methods of self-soothing to calm yourself down and avoid checking out or dissociating from yourself. Stay connected to you and your feelings to the very best of your ability. This may be a training process. It may take time, but you can learn this. I'm actually working on a self-soothing audio download, so stay tuned. Your true self is the part of you that is real, not the perfected self-image. It is the part of you that has all these complex emotions. Some people believe their true self is some kind of perfected self, and this couldn't be further from the truth. The more you are real and honest with how you feel and who you are by nature, the more you are connecting to your authentic self, which is your true self. Your authentic self includes your inner child, the emotional aspect of self. Often as adults, we've been conditioned to cut off from our emotional inner child and pretend that we have it all together and nothing fazes us. The truth is, you have it a lot more together when you are connected to your inner child, your emotional aspect. When you cut off from this important aspect of you, you are operating only from part of yourself, not your whole self. Your true self is your whole self, and to bring all those fragmented parts of yourself back together in harmony with one another, you have succeeded in becoming whole. We often look for our wholeness in others. We look for others who may be strong in areas we are weak, or who have qualities we admire but don't see ourselves as having. We do this in our pursuit of wholeness, but we don't ever truly become whole by looking to others to fill our missing parts. We have to do this ourselves. We are often attracted to the narcissist because he or she can appear very confident, self-assured, physically fit and attractive, and sometimes even unrattled. like nothing ever gets to him. But narcissists are people too, and they can present in so many different ways that it's more important that you look at the narcissist in your life and what qualities you see that person having that you are lacking, just to understand yourself better. Sometimes the very thing we are attracted to in a narcissist is their lack of emotional depth. If you are a deeply emotional person or an empath, even a borderline, you may be attracted to the emotional shallowness of the narcissist, even if this is unconscious. I was involved with a narcissist who was extremely shallow emotionally, but I didn't see this right away. What I saw initially was someone who appeared emotionally solid because nothing ever seemed to rattle him. He balanced my emotional sensitivity with his emotional solidity. But whenever we had issues, he would just check out and walk away because he didn't believe any issues in our relationship had anything to do with him. He was fine. I was the one who had the issues, and I was going to have to deal with them myself because he wasn't going to go there with me. The longer the relationship continued, the more emotional and off balance I became. I looked to him for comfort and support for my increasingly unbalanced emotional state, and he continued to invalidate me emotionally until I got sick and eventually had an emotional breakdown. What I discovered later in my healing process was that we both had strong emotional natures, but he was completely cut off from his, and so I was doing all the emotional heavy lifting for both of us. I was doing all the feeling work. And because he was so deeply repressed, I was carrying a huge emotional weight on my shoulders. When I would look to him to help me carry this weight, he would invalidate me and tell me it was my issue. Eventually, I crumbled under the weight. This crumbling resulted in my leaving him and beginning my long 3-year journey of recovering myself from that relationship, which was also 3 years. This relationship was back before all the info was out there on narcissistic abuse, and I didn't even know what was happening for quite some time. This was the relationship that began my research and work with narcissistic abuse. Ironically, this person was not at all outwardly abusive. He didn't yell at me, he didn't call me names. What he did do was use sex as a way of dumping his emotions onto me. He invalidated my reality and my feelings, consistently connected with other women energetically, played the devil's advocate in my issues with other people, presenting their side. And as the relationship neared its ending, he began finding fault with me and my artistic expression. I was left feeling like something was really wrong with me. My core shame was deeply triggered. I had a lot of work to do on myself to bring myself back to life. My passion in life arose from this initial experience with narcissism, and I devoted myself to helping others to come back to life after the deep soul rape that comes with narcissistic abuse. Narcissistic relationships can be a lot more damaging than relationships that are physically abusive, because when someone hits you or yells at you, you know what is happening. If you tell someone about it, they will acknowledge that it is abuse. But with narcissistic abuse, not only does the narcissist deny there's any kind of abuse going on, but friends, family, and even therapists may deny there's any kind of abuse going on. It can be crazy making. Most people don't recognize narcissistic projection as abuse, but it is. It is sometimes the worst kind of abuse because it is like a slow killing virus that by the time you realize you have the virus, it's almost too late. You've already been deeply compromised. Because of the depth of the compromise, it takes time to heal and recover yourself. There's no quick fixes here. And yet almost everyone seeks the quick fix. They don't want to feel the pain, the fear, the anxiety, and all the PTSD symptoms that come as a result of narcissistic abuse. Most people just want to leave the relationship and have it all go away. But it doesn't work this way. This is why I call my book Healing Narcissistic Abuse and Finding the True Self. The true self has been greatly compromised, and as I said, this may have begun in early childhood, but it's brought to a huge head in the narcissistic relationship. It may have come to the forefront of your awareness in such a relationship. Maybe you never realized how cut off you were from your true self until now. So there's good that comes from this if we do the work. We often find ourselves for the very first time. Some are content to just get back to where they were before the relationship began, but most of us can never really go back to that person. We have to go forward to the person we were truly meant to be. That person may be more cautious, careful, and suspicious initially, but this is part of the process. Eventually, we learn to trust ourselves, and this is really a huge part of finding the true self. We have to learn to really trust ourselves. We have to trust ourselves to keep ourselves out of harm's way, to say no and mean no when something is clearly not good for us. Learn to listen and follow our intuition. And most of all, trust that we are worthy of love and care. We have to develop that love and care for ourselves first and foremost. It may take some time to develop that love and to see ourselves as worthy. But once we do develop this self-love, we won't allow anyone to mistreat us any longer. When we see signs of mistreatment, we will disengage from the person mistreating us, or if appropriate, confront that person and let them know how you were affected by their behavior. If that person is capable of hearing you, you may have a healing and build trust together. But if that person cannot hear you and attempts to make you wrong for seeing their behavior as mistreatment, you don't have anything to build on. It's best to cut your losses and move on. These are the things we learn in the path back to self. When we love ourselves, it is like loving our own precious child. We want to protect that beloved self and take good care of that person. We want to pay attention to her needs or his needs, provide the time and space for his or her feelings and for healing. When healing from narcissistic abuse, the narcissist really no longer matters. Allow that person to think and believe however he or she pleases. Allow that person to live in his or her distorted reality. It is not your reality, and you no longer have to align with it or find a way to fit into it. What matters now is that you find your own truth and your own reality and align with that. What is real for you is what matters now. You no longer want to allow anyone to make your reality wrong. You want to learn to validate yourself. And if you work with anyone, work with someone who truly validates you and your reality. This does not mean that a counselor or coach never confronts you or introduces a different perspective, but he or she will not make you wrong for how you are feeling. You will feel seen, heard, and valued, and this gives you the space to truly see, hear, and value yourself. Remember, on the path back to self, it's no longer about the narcissist. Now it is about you. Embrace yourself and your own healing journey, and you will begin not only to come back to life, but to truly thrive in who you are. You may look back on this horrific experience and silently thank the narcissist in your life for being the catalyst for your greatest transformation. I want to thank you for listening. And once again, you can go to www.narcissismfree.com and click on books to order healing narcissistic abuse and finding the true self. A lot of the things that we talked about today are in that book, but it is a 380-page book, so there is a lot of information there for you. If you would like counseling, spiritual coaching, or hypnotherapy support, click on the counseling and hypnotherapy link. You can easily schedule your session online using my online calendar. I wish you blessings on your journey. Thank you.